in all of these things, I started to encounter the same entity reappearing and reappearing. And all of these images had one thing in common. They all had tentacles with heads at the end of the tentacles, so these faces. And I realized it's the same being. And so my research, my article that I shared on the website of Graham was about what if humanity was in contact with these entities for thousands of years, and they put that entity in their textiles to preserve that knowledge and to preserve the importance of that relationship.
Okay, so today I have with me David Rakowski. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, English speakers try their best with Polish names, but it'll be David Rakowski.
Okay, cool. So we are in the Amazon jungle, deep in the Amazon jungle during the wet, rainy season. We're a couple hours from Iquitos, something like that, and in David's house at a ayahuasca center that you work at. So David wrote an article on grahamhancock.com. It was super interesting about entities from other dimensions. So we're here to talk about that and maybe some other stuff. So first thing, David, why are you here in the middle of the hottest, sweatiest part of the planet? What's going on?
Well, I think it all started around 17 years ago when I drank ayahuasca for the first time, and my first intention was I want to help indigenous wisdom keepers to preserve this knowledge and to deliver this medicine of ayahuasca to the Western world. So, long story short, 17 years later, I'm working in an ayahuasca center with the indigenous Shipibo tribe and supporting them in delivering the medicine to the world.
Okay. So ayahuasca is DMT and a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, which helps the DMT be orally active. Now, your article on the site was about mainly about Huilca. Now, Huilca is a new thing for most people, I think. A lot of people have heard of ayahuasca, but Huilca is not well known. Tell me about Huilca. What is Huilca?
Mm-hmm. Huilca is a plant which has seeds, and these seeds, when you heat them up on a pan and then you grind them and mix them with an activator, which in the ancient times would be shells from the sea, seashells, and then they would have calcium in them, and that calcium is the activator for the Huilca to inject it to as a snuff into your nostrils. So
Huilca is, it's a seed, is that right?
It's a seed from a plant, and the plant grows in Peru, and its sister plant also grows in Colombia and in Venezuela. There are tribes still using yopo.
So yopo I've heard of before before Huilca. So yopo, so it's a seed, they grind it up and then they shoot it up their nose.
Exactly.
And then that, and then Huilca is the same, but it's from the Andes instead of...
Exactly. It's from Peru, from the Andes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I understand with...
it's exactly called Anadanera columbrina, but I'm really bad at the original names.
Wait, so. I think I wrote it down. Anadenanthera columbrina.
Anadenanthera columbrina.
Okay. Well, that's a tough
Huilca
one.
Is much easier. And people here call it Mama Huilca before, and now a little bit more hidden and more rare are the maestros who work with it, called Huilqueros. And they still use it. Often it was also used with huachuma, meaning San Pedro cactus, the mescaline cactus, in ancient history in Peru. And what's special about Huilca is that it has three types of DMT in it. It has bufotenin, it has N,N-DMT, and it has 5-MeO-DMT.
As opposed to ayahuasca, which contains chikruna, which has which type of DMT?
N,N-DMT only.
Okay, so he's got a different kind. And what's the difference?
I think it's the plant that has the most complete amount of DMT in it. Like, it has three types, nothing else in the planet has that much amount of DMT. Although, in Huilca, the main one is bufotenin. And the closest thing I would compare it to is bufo, bufo toad, which has exactly as well, it has 5-MeO-DMT mainly, and it also has bufotenin. which is in a smaller amount. Wilco on the other side has more bufotonin and less 5-MeO-DMT. But
bufotonin is a type of DMT?
It's a type of DMT as well, yeah.
Okay. So with DMT, most people, when they take DMT, you know, in the West, I think they smoke it. Mm-hmm. And it gives them a very short, sharp experience, 10, 15 minutes of just into another dimension.
Right.
Ayahuasca, on the other hand, is a good 6 hours of journeying in this other world. Wilco, what's the
Wilco is around 45 minutes to 1 hour, I would say, depending on the dosage. But some tribes, for example, in Venezuela, which use Yopo, they chew ayahuasca vine first, so that when later they take the Yopo, it takes them on a journey for around 6 hours as well. So it's possible to make it longer.
All right, so in your experience with Wilco, you came into contact with some kind of entity. Now, I understand when people drink ayahuasca, they tend to meet the ayahuasca spirit, which is often some sort of serpentine female thing. You had some experience with something different with Wilco. What did you meet?
I think I've tried different types of DMT, and with each type of DMT I tried, I had the encounters with the same entity. So I did ayahuasca, for example, I did ayahuasca in the mountains, in the Andes. I did changa in a cave chamber that was cut out by Incas or pre-Incan civilizations. We do these things, I go to sacred sites, work with plant medicines there to try to connect with the energy of these places and understanding why were they made there. And I also did Wilco in, for example, Temple of Chavín in Huaraz, which is a few thousand year old temple of pre-Incan civilization that used psychedelics for rituals. And in all of these places, I met the same entity, which was octopoid, squid-like entity with tentacles, and each tentacle had a face at the end of the tentacles at the front, and I couldn't really see exactly the entity itself because the tentacles were kind of taking over the space. Even though it was a very serious experience, one thing I remember out of this very animate experience, like the being and so on, so it's very hard to grasp with my mind, besides the fact that there were tentacles, is that the faces were kind of a little bit sometimes cartoonish, and kind of like DMT can be in some place. It can be a little bit silly, I don't know, a little bit out of this world, I would call it, maybe not even a little bit. So each time I met this entity, I could communicate with it with my own feelings and emotions, that if I would, for example, be in peace and love and accepting its presence and trusting it, it would come closer and it would operate on me and would kind of take out dark violet energy out of me and help me with some pains or different things in my body. But if I would, at some point, if my ego got a little bit scared of what is happening, you know, like with the kind of scream inside, then the octopus would kind of like hide into the ether, I don't know, like kind of like a
withdraw,
like a my friend octopus kind of feeling, like the octopus can come and closer, but if you make a sudden move, it kind of scares away. So it would mimic my own feelings and it would react to that.
Okay, but so I mean, you know, you've got to take an ayahuasca many times. There are many spirits you encounter that act kind of, you know, similarly. They come, they do some work on you, and you can interact with them. And they might look different. What's so interesting and special about this one? Why is this one worthy of attention over the others? What's different about it?
Because I met it a few times in different places, I started thinking, I wonder if this entity was present and history of Peru and the pre-Incan civilizations, where if they used psychedelics, if they used Wilco, for example, which is a big shock for me to know that there is an ancient way of doing DMT that's not ayahuasca, and if they were using that, then maybe they were already in contact with this entity. So fortunately, when I was working with Dennis McKenna, he directed me to Manolo Torres. He was giving a talk in one of the events organized by Machina Academy, and he was talking about archaeological finds in Peru and Wilca. And so when I got in contact with him, he directed me to their database of images of different archaeological finds, so I could scan through many, many pages of beautiful archaeological finds, different artworks, different handicraft, textiles, and so on, which was the main way of the ancient people of Peru to communicate about their life, to show part of their life. There was no written language, but there were lots of artwork and textiles and pottery as well. So I went through all of that, and in all of these things, I started to encounter the same entity reappearing and reappearing. And all of these images had one thing in common. They all had tentacles with heads at the end of the tentacles, so these faces. And I realized it's the same being. And so my research, my article that I shared on the website of Graham was about what if humanity was in contact with these entities for thousands of years, and they put that entity in their textiles to preserve that knowledge and to preserve the importance of that relationship.
All right, mm-hmm. So we've got one hit from you seeing this entity recently. Mm-hmm. We've got these textiles that seem to be showing the same thing. Anyone else? I mean, you've obviously had contact with a lot of people who've been drinking ayahuasca and taking Wicca, mm-hmm. and taking DMT, and you've talked to a lot of maestros. Mm-hmm. Is this something that is a commonly encountered entity, or is this something that you've seen and there's just a few textiles?
Well, first of all, it's, from what I understand, Viracocha, which is the being, is the highest entity in the pantheon of beliefs in Peru and Bolivia. So it's a very important being, and it's not few textiles, it's everywhere. I went through probably hundreds of them, and I could only choose a few of them for the website because of the rights. That was the reason I had to limit it. So, and that's one of the things. So across few civilizations and few thousand years, it appears constantly in different forms, but all of the forms in the end have tentacles, have snakes with faces, with heads coming out of the main being. And then I went to recent research in Imperial College, where they already study DMT entities. And inside of the research, a big percentage of people who did DMT in a clinical setting was that they did report octopoid, tentacled, squid-like beings, and there's quite a big percentage of their reports containing that entity. I also went online and I checked online Reddit DMT reports, and I found quite a lot of them there. So all of these things really confirm that we are still in contact with these beings, and that we've been in contact with them for thousands of years.
But it's not just these beings, you're interested in one in particular.
Yeah.
And this being that you've met, mm-hmm. Have you met anyone else in modern times? You know, have you met anyone personally who's encountered the same being?
I haven't met personally, but I did in a breaking convention in London. I did talk to one of the students working with David Luke, who was responsible for the research on DMT entities there. And he told me that he was doing all these counting of different reports and so on. And he did meet another person who mentioned that entity. I didn't manage to get in touch with him before I written the article, but seems like it's a recurring theme for some people. And I'm not sure if it's the same one entity, or is it just a type or civilization of entities or group of entities that we can get in touch with.
And then get in touch with for what purpose? What's their mission? What are they doing? You said mm-hmm. one of them acted a bit like a doctor. Now, there are many mm-hmm. doctor spirits. Mm-hmm. Is that all they're good for? Just coming and doing some sort of taking out bad mm-hmm. energy and, you know, What do you think this guy's doing if he exists?
I feel it's really hard for us to fully understand with our logical minds exactly what is their purpose or what is their what are they really doing to us. Some people say it's some kind of like that psychedelics and these kind of encounters activate our DNA and all these things. This is nothing we can scientifically prove for now. This healing, this healing of different parts of the body, it might be also connected to unlocking chakras or allowing the energy flow more smoothly so we can be more in tune with our intuition or things like that. They might be healing serious diseases or stress in the body. I think from what I asked my maestro Wilquero that I worked with, he told me that these ancient temples in Peru, for example, were built so that we as kids and niños, we can come to these places and we can learn from the abuelos, and the abuelos being these ancient spirits that come and teach us, show us different technologies, show us different things. What this entity showed me once was that it kind of invited, after cleaning my energy, it kind of invited me into its world or something. It felt like it's taking me somewhere and allowing me to look behind the veil of reality, and I could see something like cities of gold or something like that. And that was really surprising for me. I was not sure if the place that I've seen is their world that they kind of showed me for a moment, or was it maybe ancient Incan sites, worlds before the conquistadors came and how they looked like before, and maybe that's why these cities were like that, because they were working together with these entities and creating a different kind of civilization based not on conquest, not on guns and war in the sense of conquest, but maybe they were creating something more united, maybe using different technologies to shape rocks, to create, you know, elevate things.
The story of Viracocha tracks along those lines. I mean, the story of Viracocha, as I understand it, and despite my heritage, I'm not an expert on it.
Right.
He was a dude who appeared suddenly, possibly a white-bearded guy, much like Quetzalcoatl, much like Kukulkan, and I understand that there's some debate about whether they were all the same entity, Viracocha.
Yeah, I think your dad was talking quite a bit about that as well, and in his books he was writing about it. I don't really buy this white-bearded guy thing. I feel, he's openly called Viracocha, the entity that you can find in the Sun Gate in Tiahuanaco, which holds two staffs and has these tentacles coming out of it, is literally called Viracocha by the local people. And so I would stick to that, and I wouldn't personify it as a human. I would.
But he is personified as a human, is he not? I mean, certainly Quetzalcoatl, I mean, he comes in two forms. He comes as the white-bearded man, but he also comes as the feathered serpent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with Kukulkan.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume the same with Viracocha. So there's this kind of like duality to it, mm-hmm. where it's this strange therianthrope, mm-hmm. serpentile therianthrope, but also a physical human.
Mm.
Now, your interactions with this entity are, mm-hmm. of course, non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that maybe this entity manifested physically in the past, or do you think the physical element was maybe just to add to the myth and not really based on reality? And the reality was that this is a being that you can only encounter through interactions, mm-hmm. through, you know, DMT, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah, I do believe more in the power of psychedelics, and I wouldn't look at these entities more, as we call them, let's call them even aliens. I wouldn't look outside for them. I would really look into other dimensions and phasing between them, communication between these different dimensions with the use of tools that were given to us to establish that communication. And knowing how significant these plants were for the local people of these pre-Incan civilizations, I would say they were really in touch with them. That was their main focus in their belief systems, in their mythologies, and their whole, as they didn't have religion, that was the main focus of it. They would create these rituals, these rites, to get in touch with them, to get in contact, to receive knowledge, to also receive technologies, ideas about the water systems, about how to use it in physical operations, how to, maybe you've seen these skeletons found in Peru where they used very advanced chirurgic operations to transplant or to cut out parts of the skull or things like that. So I believe there's a reason for it. Maybe they were learning through that relationship with these entities. Do I have 100% proof? No, of course not. It's something that we're still debating if DMT entities even exist or not. Is it creation of the mind? Or
there's a very high chance it's all in the head. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't. My experiences of it don't support that theory, but it, I could well be wrong.
Exactly.
Okay, we've got Tiwanaku, mm-hmm. we've got the Sun Gate, we've got Viracocha there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about the duality of Viracocha being either a man mm-hmm. or maybe this strange serpentile mm-hmm. weird octopus mm-hmm. thing. Tell me about the Viracocha in Tiwanaku. Mm-hmm. What's going on there? I gather that's the most important, or one of the most important megaliths. It's one of the most important statues, one of the most important gods. Exactly. What's going on with that particular scene?
That particular scene is by Lake Titicaca, which is believed to be the beginning of humanity, whereas from where humanity is coming from the lake, and Viracocha would appear there and then start traveling to Cusco and creating the capital there. In Tiwanaku especially, there is on the Sun Gate, there is a carving of Viracocha holding two staffs. And modern archaeology believes that he's either some kind of thunder deity that's holding two thunders and so on. Whereas, thanks to recent archaeological finds of Manolo Torres, not far away from Tiwanaku, in a tomb in Atacama Desert, he encountered 150 Wilca kids, so applicators called tepis, and
snuff pipes or something. Yeah,
snuff pipe which had copper on it and golden endings, and then also spoons, also special kind of trays, really beautifully handmade. Trays with Tiwanaku artwork with the Viracocha as well on it, and the powder of the snuff in the bags with it. So if you look at it this way, and you kind of worked with rapé, type of snuff made of tobacco, and you've seen different types of tepis, some of them are singular, just one pipe. But some of them divide into a double one that goes into both nostrils at the same time. So you can, instead of doing it once in each nostril, you do it for double at the same time. So if you know that and you see these staffs, you see that one of the staffs is a single one and one of them divides into two. So
that's the one that Viracocha is holding. In Tiwanaku.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Okay. And each then entity that's below, which has wings and also has tentacles coming out of each body of these entities that kind of gather on both sides, they also carry these staffs.
Is there some debate among archaeologists that these staffs may or may not be Wilca snuff kits? Is this your idea? Is this established?
That is mainly idea I came up with from my research. Manolo was mainly focused on just Wilca and just the findings. He never connected it, but I did send him my research and he really liked it, the idea, and he told me to follow it and to share it with the world.
Okay, mm-hmm. so this most important statue, most important megalith, most important god, we've got Viracocha in Tiwanaku.
There's one more statue there, Ponce statue, also in Tiwanaku, which holds two items in its hand. And no one really knows exactly what it is, but Manolo suggested that one of them could be a Wilca kit and the other one could be a Wilca tray as well.
So why do you think they have Wilka there on this most important statue? Why would Viracocha be holding Wilka? Do you think it's to say, you know, take the Wilka and you find me or something? Is that the plan? I mean, what do you think? Is it just a representation of what they were doing at the time? They were taking a lot of Wilka, so they put that on the statue. What do you think?
I think the Sun Gate is created there for the reason of the solstice. When the solstice comes, it goes through the door. And I think maybe working with the sun energy and doing Wilka in that place would help to connect to this golden city, so all these entities. And I think it's a clue, I would guess, or it's an instruction for what were they doing there, why was this place so important for them, and how to connect to these beings, how did they connect to them. Kind of makes sense for me. I don't know if it makes sense probably for modern archaeology who has no idea what psychedelics are so much, or they never tried it. I don't think it makes any sense, but for people who go deep into that, I guess it could make some sense. It's worth exploring for sure.
Okay, so we've got these Viracocha or Quetzalcoatl, we've got these guys. They were, as I understand it, they were civilizers. They were come here to advance civilization, to take us from hunter-gatherers into, you know, some sort of harmonious being. The entity that you met, again, it was a kind of a doctor, but you suggesting from your interactions with it that it was trying to show you a new way of, I don't know, sort of developing civilization. If this entity is Viracocha, mm-hmm. I understand Viracocha was a very powerful entity. So far we've got, you know, some ancient textiles and we've got your interactions with it. If this is real, why am I not hearing more about it? Why isn't everybody telling me, yeah, Viracocha told me to build a house tomorrow made of gold or something? You know, if this is real, why isn't there more about it?
Yeah, I think the way these entities communicate with people, and I don't think it's just this type of entities of the octopus-like, but there are different ones that people report on DMT, which are, let's say, greys or reptilian ones or felines or mantises, insectoid ones, which are pretty common. I think there is a reason why people have connections with these different types of entities, and I don't exactly know the reason why they choose us or we choose to do DMT and we are called to it, but there has to be some underlying reason why some people do have the connection with that and why do some people have the connection with a different one. Some people have really silly encounters with, let's say, mechanic elves, and even in the Ayahuasca Center, the same ones that Terence McKenna was talking about, I met a few people who met these mechanic elves, and for example, their interactions would be that these mechanic elves always show them some kind of advanced technology they do, and they want to show everything, they're so excited about sharing it. And when they show it, and they show something, and you're like, wow, and you're like, wow, look at this, this is how we create emotions or feelings and stuff. And but then these people would at some point get frustrated, because every time they would go back into a DMT experience, they would continue to encountering these entities. And then they would get like, okay, this is fun, I'm seeing something and so on, but I want to go further, I want to experience something else. And yet they would always come back to these mechanic elves, for example, you know. So I would say there is some reason for us to be connected to these beings, and to study that, it's almost like being a translator for between dimensions, and you can almost become like an ambassador for these civilizations, where you can learn from them, share some stories about them, share your experiences about them, and maybe with that we can become as a collective more aware that there are other entities and civilizations around us, or it's just all a dream and it doesn't make any sense, which is probably as possible as all of this story.
Well, I mean, I gather the purpose of these interactions with them is to try and bring back some of the wisdom and the knowledge and the other ways of doing things that, that they have in whatever dimension they do or do not inhabit, and bring it back to make our own one better. Mm-hmm. Now, if Vita Quoche is the civilizer, if Vita Quoche is a DMT entity that we can encounter, and this entity is trying to instruct us on how to build a better society, mm-hmm. one would assume the societies that use DMT regularly were living in that way more. I mean, our own society is very disconnected from spirit mm-hmm. entirely. It's based on exploitation. It's based on, you know, strongest wins. Terence McKenna said, mm-hmm. the fang-toothed monkey, whoever had the biggest fangs wins.
Mm-hmm.
The Hwilkha-using societies that did exist, I gather they're small in number now. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, most people have been inducted into this dominated culture. So from the Hwilkha-using societies, what was it like? What was their life like? Were they in harmony with nature and in harmony with each other? Were they a model for the next level of humanity, or were they just like us, you know?
Well, for sure there are, I think, the light side of these societies and darker side, which we already learned about. The lighter side, for example, of a society called, or civilization called Chavin. And the Chavin was, for example, they didn't have any military. And it was the priests or the shamans that were the leaders of that civilization. So, for example, they built this huge temple called Chavin de Wantar, which is one of the oldest temples. I think it's like around 5,000 years old. And that civilization, that temple, was used for Wachuma and probably Wilka rituals as well. So what would happen, they would have this huge mirror in the middle of the plaza with water on it to watch astrology, watch the skies. They would also take psychedelics as a rite of passage, and they would go into these underground labyrinth tunnels where they would almost be in a sensory deprivation. But there would also be underground water channels going above these labyrinth, creating the sound of water passing and almost like charging the rocks that the labyrinth was made of. And so in complete darkness, with this sound, this continuing drone of the water, and with these instruments called puputus, which are these giant shells, and the shamans would play on these shells through these windows to create even more resonance inside of the chamber and take people into this trance state with probably higher probability. Because if you've ever tried Wachuma around water, rivers, waterfalls and so on, it has a profound effect on the effects of the medicine. It really kicks it up. And I believe use of frequency, sound by the civilization, and ancient instruments, and these underground chambers, rocks, and so on, was all connected. So then, for example, another civilization called Caral, which is probably one of the oldest one in South America, and it's for sure the one that had the first pyramids built in the world, which are supposedly older than the Giza pyramids, if Giza pyramids are as old as we are told. But Caral was older, and what they found in Caral was that they found lots of flutes, instruments. They learned that that city was thriving on art, music, trade, but there are no signs of wars or fighting. I think the wars came more in later civilizations. I don't know exactly. There were some other ones. Like Sachin has some kind of carvings of warriors of Sachin where they carry parts of the bodies, but there is a belief that maybe they were just sacrificing some people for the gods, for the spirits and so on. And then, so we get to a point where there's the light and there is the shadow. The shadow is the sacrifice. We don't really know why would they sacrifice other bodies, but from some experience that I had with different spirits in the ayahuasca ceremonies, and what I learned from the Shipibo tribe, for example, is that there are spirits that feed on good energy and they are attracted by good energies, and these are usually the medics that come and help us. And there are also spirits that feed on negative energy, on suffering, on fear, on pain. And maybe they were also interacting with both. So now the shamans who interact with the negative spirits are called brujos and dark wizards, kind of, dark magicians. Whereas the ones that work with the medics are more shamans that you want to go to for healing.
So, but we were talking about local using societies, were they better? Was the question. Now, you were saying local using societies were, they had some societies, you Chavin, some other, I can't
Chavin.
Remember. Chavin. Mm-hmm. They had the shamans in charge instead of the politicians and the military.
Mm-hmm.
However, were they necessarily better? Okay, you're saying those ones had no war, but you're also talking about brujos and negative shamans and all those kind of things. Is that what we need to be doing? Like, I would very much like a society with no war. I'd like a nice, peaceful society. Humans have so much potential to be beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful beings that Terence McKenna talked about them, you know, the gardener caretakers of planet Earth. That's what we could be.
Yeah, exactly.
And what we are is this very rapacious species which is slowly destroying the planet in itself.
Mm-hmm.
What's the trick, do you think, to make it better? Is it simply a case of taking a lot of ayahuasca and huilca and those kind of things to try and meet these entities, to try and be instructed on how to live better? I mean, how do we get it back?
Yeah, I think I liked what in the end Dennis was saying every time someone asked him. The most important thing is, what do you take out of this experience? What do you bring back into this reality? And how can you improve your surroundings with this knowledge, with whatever you're learning? And I feel each person that comes to this world has some kind of, not a mission, but kind of their dharma, their path, and their skill, something that they can share. And these plants help us to remember what is our trait, to really that we can help, that we can be in service with to the world, and how can we improve it. So I would say this is the key, more than just constantly doing psychedelics without any meaning and just flying with the entities and so on. In the end, each time we do this, we always come back to the physical form, and this is where we have to implement these solutions and these teachings. And some of them can be learned from them, and some of them can be learned from within. And there's not much of a difference if it's coming from outside or inside. The main end game is, how can we improve our reality and the reality of people around us through the use of these substances, but also through the lessons that we bring with us back.
So I believe there's some studies, DMTX is one of them, you know about this, and I think that they're doing extended DMT trips to see if they can nail down the idea that these entities are real and persistent and contactable, and you know, DMT acts a bit like the telephone or the, you know, the Skype or the Zoom call to interact with them. Now, I've taken many psychedelics. How do I meet Viracocha? Can I meet Viracocha? You know, can anybody meet Viracocha? You know, how does it work, do you think? I mean, is he just there hanging around waiting for the telephone call?
I would say I don't have an answer for that question. Maybe go to Tiwanaku and go to the Sun Gate on the solstice and do Wilka there. I would say each of the encounters with Viracocha were in the Andes, for example. I've never had the encounter in the jungle. In the jungle, I've encountered mantises, insectoid beings. I've never encountered Viracocha here. I did encounter in Chavin, also with me in the same ceremony. Four other people encountered the same being in the same time.
The same octopoid being
came in the same ceremony to the same circle. And
so you saw him in your visions, and other people saw him in their visions too. So you have met other people who've seen the same guy.
We did share that experience together there, but I've never kind of met a person out of that space.
Do you think they saw it because you influenced them, like you talked about this octopoid entity and then they were like, they had that in their mind, so he showed up? Or did this same guy come out of nowhere to all however many of you?
I think after the experience we just sat down and we talked about it the next day at breakfast, and the same time kind of I started talking about it and other people started joining in, having the same experience. Who knows if I influenced on them and I programmed it into their mind and they shared it.
Do you know if you told them about the entity?
No, before.
This was a unique new experience to them. They never heard of this.
They also did the Wilka for the first time.
And you hadn't told them about this guy.
No.
He turned up and all four,
four out of 10 people, I think, yeah.
Four out of 10 people saw the same guy.
Yeah.
Okay, and what did he do? So you talked about him, okay, Viracocha was the civilizer, he was to try and help us upgrade civilization to, you know.
At least in the stories that are told, you know, your dad was talking about, in this situation for me, it acted more as a medic, and he just gave me a glimpse into that other reality.
And for those other four people?
Yeah, the same, kind of. It started kind of hovering around them and doing some work on them and so on. I remember in that ceremony, I had strong pains in this part of my body going to these ceremonies. And then after these ceremonies, I saw him with the tentacles going here and taking out this dark energy. And then after the ceremonies, that pain would go away. So for me, he was a medic. He did show me something of that plane. For the people, it was a medic as well. I don't really know if he's a civilizer or stuff like that. With some other entities that I've met in my life, I had more of a feeling of them trying to teach me something and trying to communicate more directly stuff that's more about learning and teaching. Although the Shipibos, for example, in their tradition, in the jungle ayahuasca tradition, they believe in the spirits of the plants. So they identified the DMT spirits as the spirits of the plants. And some of them are healers and some of them are teachers. And they come during the master plant diet, which is a process, something like Vipassana with plant medicines. They come and they either teach us during dreams or during meditation or in ceremonies. And they can teach you how to sing, they can guide you in your life, they can really do different things. So they do, for Shipibos, this is normal. Like, this is their everyday life, this is what they practice for, they diet these plants so they can get more allies, they become connected with these beings, and then when they need to use them in ceremonies, they can call them in, and these medics, for example, come and heal people around. If you diet a plant that's more focused on teaching and learning and how to be a shaman or curandero yourself, you diet a plant that's more about the teaching, you know, of it. That's my my Casio. So there are both sides of it. From learning from Shipibos, which is kind of complementary to my own research of these other things, I can understand that there are different types and they play different roles in our interactions. So the mantises, for example, the insectoid beings, would come in my ayahuasca ceremonies here, and they would specifically work on my throat and help me open it up and start singing in ceremonies and finding my Icaros. I also had encounter with Egyptian deities, and these Egyptian deities would be more teaching me about different things, teaching me the power of meditation and breath work, or showing me different things in that I should do in the future in my life, or something guiding me in a way. So I would separate them, the ones that I interacted with, I would separate them into the healers and the teachers.
Okay, but then, as I understand the legends of Viracocha, now there's no written tradition, mm-hmm. they have no written language, all we've got is the statues, and I assume mm-hmm. an oral tradition that somehow survived. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of them ever talking about him as being a doctor or as a teacher, whereas your interactions with him has been more as a him, if it's the same guy, has been more as a doctor rather than a teacher. Mm-hmm. How do you tie those two ends together?
I've never, ever really, to be honest, heard about spoken stories about it. I think it's so old that a lot of it has been lost, maybe reinterpreted and so on. I don't want to question it because maybe it's somewhere there, but if there's no written tradition, then believing that 300-400 years someone speaking to another person stays in the same role as it was, it's hard to say, you know. And for sure, I'm not really, as I said, it feels weird for me to believe in this embodied version of it. But I would say each perspective is important because they all complete each other and maybe they create a wider spectrum of understanding towards these beings. Whereas focusing on just one might be limiting. So I wouldn't try to say which one is more important. Maybe the healing comes as a form of preparation to also receive some kind of guidance. Or maybe these entities and these different civilizations of entities are working together to help us. And some of them do this kind of work, others do another one. And they all want us to heal as a collective, as a singular unit as well, each person. And they all want us to grow as a collective as well, to become the stewards of nature that we're supposed to be and understand the oneness.
Why do you think they want that?
I think there is a theory that it might even be us from the future coming back to the past and helping us. There are beliefs that the past, this, the present, and the future are happening all at the same time. Mm-hmm. They can interact with each other. Why is that happening more? Why do they need that? I believe that we are still, from what I learned from the entities I have met in different encounters in the mountains and temples of Peru, is that we are now, as a collective, as human civilization, we're in a kindergarten of consciousness, and we're more focused on fighting, oh, this is my toy, no, it's my toy, no, it's yours, and fighting that. Whereas we are supposed to grow up and to enter this higher plane so that we can start being in touch with these entities and understand that we are not alone in this world.
Well, I want these things to be real. They feel real, they seem real, and if they are real, I want them to be persistent and contactable. Now, my only persistent and reliably contactable spirit is ayahuasca. When I take, well, it's the same with the other plants, they all have their own, but when I take ayahuasca, I pretty much always seem to meet this same entity. It feels feminine, it feels like serpentile, and it feels like it wants to teach me to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, the other spirits, and I met many other spirits, and again, they could just be parts of my mind, who the hell knows, they're a lot more nebulous. They're a lot harder to nail down, a lot harder to contact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, UFOs and that whole world of aliens and ETs and all that stuff, they're kind of similar. They appear sometimes, they come sometimes, they seem to want to interact, and yet at the same time you can't just pick up a telephone and say, ET, please come here. And yet sometimes they are kind of contactable, but sometimes not. It's a very nebulous, mm-hmm. kind of difficult thing to nail down.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about ETs and UFOs is that the greater part of my interactions with them is that they've appeared during ceremonies. It tends to be when I'm sober, UFOs are much less apparent, and yet when I've had a ceremony, even with other people, boom, there's an orb in the sky and it starts flying around and blinking and doing all kinds mm-hmm. of crazy stuff, mm-hmm. and other people see it and they're all, what the hell is
mm-hmm.
going on?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that these plants are some way kind of portals or telephones into those
mm-hmm.
dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So does your experience mirror this? Have you also found that these entities are connected? Do you think the UFOs and the ETs and the aliens mm-hmm. and all that whole jazz, they're somewhat physical manifestations of those DMT entities? Is it all one thing? Are they something mm-hmm. like, what's going on with that whole
mm-hmm.
world in your experience?
Well, how I understand it is that in our daily life, our brain is creating this kind of curtain to just limit a certain amount of information that we can grasp to maintain our physical reality, like kind of to live and so on. Whereas the spectrum of sound, the spectrum of light is way bigger than what we perceive. So it limits it for us to comprehend it, really. What happens when we take psychedelics is that these doors of perception open wide, and more information can come in, and then we can start seeing between dimensions and frequencies, and then we can interact with these beings with more ease. So that's why I believe psychedelics are really helpful with these experiences is just because of that. And are they the same? Could be. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that hyper advanced civilizations that mastered, I don't know, vertical flying and stopping mid-air and flying faster than any machine we have and then stopping again and then flying into water and coming out of water really needs to come as this kind of science fiction thing. We come in peace, but they come from the air and they land somewhere, and then all the televisions and news suddenly record it, and there's a huge world panic and so on. I would say they probably prefer communicating with each direct person, taking psychedelics in different parts of the world, or even not taking psychedelics but having the ability to be more psychic. Some people just are more open. Some people are somewhere between worlds. Like usually the shamans would be these connectors between dimensions. They would talk to the underworld or to the afterlife. They would go there to retrieve people's souls or talk to the spirits. So I would say they prefer to communicate directly with each person, and I would say the revolution will not be televised.
So you're saying you think ETs are here, and those spirits from the DMT realm, they're all coming here, individually contacting people to try and help maybe upgrade humanity to get us to the next level, and the story echoes the similar sentiment of Viracocha and Quetzalcoatl and all those guys.
And I think Viracocha is just one of them that was important for one civilization, and maybe there is some kind of portal. Maybe this place of Peru is more important for these type of entities, and they appear more commonly here. I'm not sure, but there is a reason why all these civilizations contacted the same entity and they caught the same entity into their beliefs, into their textiles, and there might be a reason for this land. Also, what I learned with these interactions is that, and I asked why these lands and why this place as a place of meeting and communication, they did tell me that because of the richness of resources in the mountains, in the Andes, of gold, of silver, of copper, of different minerals and quartz and so on, they can use that as an energy source that helps them to phase into reality and out of reality as well. And so I don't really understand it, of course, but that's the answer I received, for example.
Okay, and so you've had some interaction with ETs or UFOs or something yourself?
That's what I tried to say, is that I wouldn't like to call it ETs or UFOs because of the stigma that it carries, whereas DMT entities are kind of more a thing that is already kind of confirmed, like, you will take DMT and there's like a very big chance you will meet an entity.
But right. However, the things you've experienced are full-on lights in the sky, flying around, physically observable to other people. Mm-hmm. They exist. They're not just a vision.
Just vision with the DMT, but it was also with the use of psychedelics. The most memorable one was with mescaline, with San Pedro. Long story short, I ended up with on a hike to an ancient temple again called Huacrapucara in Peru. It's a very special place. It looks incredibly, and me and my friends decided to go there and drink Huachuma, San Pedro cactus brew. And it was my beginning of working with that plant, so I didn't really know how to dose it. So I overdosed me and my three friends, which was not the smartest idea, but well, it was what it was. So then we started hiking after drinking it, and in 3 hours, as it started loading and the sun started setting, I decided we have to set up the camp because it's getting dark and we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, and If we don't set it up while we can, while we're still not tripping fully, it might be difficult to focus on that later on. So we did set up the camp, and then we start going to this twilight space when there's still light, but it's already dark, the sun is already down. And I just took, so we all had our tents ready, we set, and I started playing a shamanic drum in trance, and I was playing it, and suddenly, first it felt almost like a star flying down to us, like an orb. But when it got closer, it looked more like a deep ocean entity that is just floating in ether, in air. It didn't have any engine, it didn't have any sound. It looked like a deep ocean entity because it was transparent, but it was also fluorescent. It had lights, and it was flashing different lights. So it felt a little bit like biomechanic in a way, because the bio was more like it floating and swimming, whereas the lights were kind of looking like there is some kind of technology in it.
How big was this thing?
From eyesight, like space, I think we saw it from around 5 to 10 meters, very close. And so we could see some details of it.
You were 5 to 10 meters away from it?
Yeah.
So this UFO, well, whatever the hell it was.
It was not big. It was more like almost like a spirit. It felt like a spirit floating.
Like a basketball kind of size, something like that?
Yeah, something like that. And more, as I say, as this deep ocean thing swimming. Like air or ether, this space between us, was almost like a substance for it.
Now, you were tripping. Yeah, however, yes. You didn't see this alone. Your other friends perceived the exact same thing. Semi-physical object in the physical reality.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was swimming towards mid-air. You.
Yeah, around us, kind of interested with the vibration and the fact that we are all very strongly under the power of the medicine. So I think it could sense our energy and the fact that we are radiating it, and this vibration of the sound as well. So it was kind of floating in mid-air, and because of some kind of ideas and guidances I received on my way to Peru and being there, I did take a MacBook with me and speaker and a microphone with me, and I had it in the tent. It's pretty crazy to take equipment on a hike like that because of the weather, or even carrying it there. But I did take it, I don't know why, but in the moment where this being appeared, I felt this is the moment where I should use the equipment to use frequencies and sound in order to communicate with it, to open some kind of bridge of communication. So I went, and I'm a music producer as well, so I opened Ableton and I started going through all the frequency range, and I started using different delays and reverbs, effects, together with microphone to create a feedback loop and create a lot of vibration and energy. And I was playing with that for a while. I also played some songs I know with some non-human languages, I would say, or like made-up languages, or we call them light languages. Some people call them light languages. And because I thought, if anything, I wouldn't use a human language to communicate with something that's alien. I would use something that's not really human, that might be channeled or something.
So meanwhile, it's just sat there floating
around. Yeah, it was just floating, and I was kind of in the tent next to it, and my friends were outside.
Where were in the tent next to it? You mean it came in the tent with you?
No. I was in the tent on my equipment, whereas my friends were outside, closer to the entity.
Okay.
And so I worked with these sounds and stuff, but nothing really happened instantly. And at some point I felt worried that I left my friends outside with it, and I'm responsible for them, and they're really tripping, and there's a edge of the cliff very near, and they could just basically fall and die. So I came out to see what's happening. And when I came out and saw what's happening, I saw my first friend who was trying to use Tai Chi and trying to communicate with the being, with Tai Chi, with the mind, and just being like, we're come in peace, and you know, we're here, it's okay, like we're not afraid and stuff. I looked on the second guy. The second guy was doing weird kung fu movements, more like, and then touching the ground, talking something under his nose in a trance, standing up, repeating the same movements. touching the ground, talking to it again. And the third, the girl was sitting in a tent and she was repeating some numbers and saying, this is the number to the mothership. So basically when I saw that, I was like, okay, I guess everything is happening as it's supposed to. I'm not going to stop this. I guess the ritual is just unfolding itself and so on. And then at one point, one of the friends started singing, kind of rapping, something like, what's in there? What's in there? And I'm like listening to him and he's like, what's in there? What's in where? And then I turn around, I had a feeling, turn around and look at the tent where my pupin was. And the tent was basically swarmed by these tiny particles. Like, I've seen them already in very high dosages of different psychedelics. Was it acid or was it DMT? I could see these tiny particles flying. They're like almost like sprites or something, like quantum, I don't know what, you know, but they were just accumulated around the tent and the equipment. And I'm like, and the first feeling I felt is like, oh, they're calling back. There's a call, I need to answer it now.
Who are they calling? They're calling you?
They're calling me
to go back into the tent and carry on playing with the music.
Yeah, to answer
and
the call.
The vibrations to continue the contact with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And the white stuff that was around the tent, was it physical or was it just light?
It was like these tiny light particles that would just be just flying and just swarming around it.
Non-physical.
In this moment, I wasn't sure what is physical and what is not, to be honest. And I would say it is physical, but only through the use of psychedelic I could be aware of it. If the dosage was not not strong enough, I would probably not be able to perceive it, you know? But because the dosage was so strong, I could clearly see it. So I felt like, okay, this is what we came here for. This is the moment. So I went back into the tent and I could see that my laptop, which was then closed but still working, and then the speaker that was still on, had these particles basically around and all covered in it, and there would be coming almost like veins out of the tent, you know, and out of the tent, out of the speaker, there would be like particles, like veins of energy coming out of it. Like the whole thing was covered with it, and the cover of the MacBook had like these particles would even turn, they would turn into a face that would kind of remind something like Egyptian pharaoh or something like that, some being.
So you're playing the music, the vibrations, the sound, whatever, and while it's happening, you're seeing faces manifest.
No, I wasn't playing anymore. I just came back,
just to look.
And it was already there on the equipment. Like, I used it before, I played with it, and they kind of received the vibration, and then they could use the technology that I provided as a bridge to embody themselves into physical reality, basically. Okay.
And so these lights, these little light white things all came together into the face of some ancient Egyptian thing. Mm-hmm. And do you think that was a vision, or do you think that was observable in 3D reality? Like everyone else, if they came into the tent, they would have seen the same thing?
I'm not sure. I haven't asked anyone to come in. Hey, guys, can you come here and check if this is real? Because I might be dreaming or something. I might be tripping. For sure, I'm tripping, you know? But I didn't think. I felt this is the moment. I didn't question it. I didn't doubt it. I wasn't like, oh, is this going to be good for me? If this is a risk, am I going to die doing this? There was no fear completely. It was almost like my whole life I was kind of meant to come here, and I was guided to come into this place and do this.
Okay, so I made the face, and then what happened?
These particles, I just realized that when they appeared for a moment when I was talking to you about this story, I just started seeing it in my corner of the eye. The closest thing I would compare it to is when you stand up too fast or you close your eyes too strong and you start seeing these kind of stuff. This is the closest thing I would compare it to. So I wonder why it just appeared for a second here. Maybe I should mention it. But anyway, what happened? I laid down next to it and I just took a deep breath, like almost feeling that it might be intense. I took a deep breath and in the moment, when I touched the cover of the laptop, the top of the laptop, the face, suddenly I started feeling a huge energy surge in my whole body. My whole body started shaking without almost control. My left hand that wasn't touching the laptop started making mudras with my hand without any control. So I was just laying down there and shaking, and my hand was making these mudras. And then the vibration was so strong, I had to release it through my voice in a way. It felt almost like you would turn on the kettle, and the kettle would just heat up so much that you had to start making the sound to let you know that the water was boiling. It felt like that. There was so much vibration in me that I had to open my mouth and start releasing that vibration through my voice. And what happened is, first it was more like tones, so more like sounds like mantras, like and stuff like that. But then it started turning into a voice and into a language, like a full-on language that wasn't my Polish language, wasn't English or Spanish that I speak. It was a language that I didn't understand, really. It was just passing through me, and I was speaking it, or something was speaking through me. And the moment when I was starting to speak it, suddenly the particles would start reacting to the voice, almost like I was commanding it, and they would start turning into a 3D model that started hovering above the laptop, turning into this kind of 3D ball with sacred geometry of like tetrahedron, 64 tetrahedron star in it. It would just kind of like Rubik's cube, it would just start like transforming and reacting to my voice and activating in some way. And to be honest, I had no idea what's happening. It felt super overwhelming. It felt like something is wearing me like a glove to do this activation thing. And even though it was masculine that I was on, at some point the energy was so strong, and even though I could see it in front of me above this laptop hovering in this 3D model, suddenly the energy was so strong, I felt like suddenly a huge release of DMT in my body, and the vision that I was seeing in front of me on the laptop became my only vision. Everything around me disappeared, and only this ball was left, and it was like a full-blown DMT experience. So I don't know how did it happen, but it felt that the interaction with this being through this electronic device and these frequencies and sound activated the inner DMT that I had inside and helped me to dive even deeper into the experience. And I think it went on for a few hours of doing that, and it was really intense, and I managed at some point to ask questions. I thought like, okay, I just don't want to be just used for something and have no idea what's happening and so on. And I just decided I'm going to ask some questions. So I decided to ask the question. So I asked the question, who are you? I guess it was the first question. And I received something, it was telepathically, and I'm going to use English because that's how I mainly share that story as well from that moment. And I'm not really sure if I heard it in English or I'm just saying it in English, but it felt like I didn't hear it, I kind of suddenly knew it in a way. I don't know how to explain it in a better way. So they say they are the watchers, and that they are here to support humanity and raising our collective consciousness, and that they are here to observe us and help us channel technologies and ideas to improve that, to support that mission. And that psychedelics are one of these technologies, and that they've been in touch with humanity in this place for thousands of years, but that knowledge has been kind of lost, and they're really happy that now this is happening again and that they have chance to reestablish this. This technology again and this communication between us. And I asked where are they from, and I seen the and I suddenly seen in my head I've seen the Orion, I've seen Venus, I've seen ancient Egypt, and I've seen Peru. I asked why Peru, and they said that it's because Peru is a type of starport right now, and that different light workers reincarnate in this reality, in this time, on this planet, to come to Peru and to remember who they are and what's their mission on this planet. And because the veil of reality is so thin in Peru, it's much easier to establish that connection and activate that remembrance. And I asked them why these mountains, and they said because of this minerals and crystals and so on that they can use to maintain their physical form. And I asked something else. They told me to, and it's kind of funny, they told me that so to them to not worry, and that everything will be okay, and that they're here to help us, and that they've been here way earlier that we've come here, and they will be even after us here. And it's all good that there are many of them helping us, and they told me, because of the music that I shared, and they told me to make event festival in Peru, which will gather more people like me into a place where they can continue activating and remembering their role and their powers. And right now I'm organizing probably the biggest event, music plant medicine event in Peru, where during 4 years of doing it, a few thousand people came through it. But right now, it's each time it's over 300 people, and it's in a temple that has 2 tons of selenite crystals under the dance floor, and it's in the mountains of Peru, which are full of these minerals as well. And we do use plant medicine like mushrooms, we use cannabis, coca leaves, and cacao mainly. Maybe some people use wachuma, but usually it just takes so long that people don't use that so much. So they do get into that zone of remembrance and downloads and participating in that event. I think these are the main things that I remember. What's interesting is since then, this language that I was using became for me a tool to participate and to share in ceremonies with. So when I'm in ayahuasca, I can easily tap into that language and use it to sing my icaros, my songs. And I can only improvise it and channel it in the moment, but I can never really remember it. I never really even tried to practice them or try to write them down or anything like that. They just come, they go. And the moment they go, I just don't remember. I don't really understand what they mean either, but my energy when I'm singing in that language is positive, and it's light, so I believe they're good.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you had an absolutely incredible experience, a gift, really, that to be able to meet one of these entities in physical form up close. I mean, that's really special.
And just one thing that I want to add, because it's funny, but it felt kind of romantic in a way, that because it felt like you meet something. It felt like there was some longing and some kind of calling to it, and that it's almost like meeting your family member after a long, long time of absence, and this kind of reintroduction, re-meeting, and it almost felt very touching and very kind of romanticized experience where you meet something through the veil of reality and you connect, you know, and Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
It sounds, apart from the romantic element, it sounds a lot like the biblical interactions with, you know, the Elohim, angels, I mean, Ezekiel's vision, or the whole shebang. It sounds quite similar.
Right.
The biblical depiction of angels is something a bit like what you described.
And I'm sure that this is just, I'm just one of many people that went through this experience in history of humanity, and this is the way they interact with us. To get contact with us. I don't think they will call BBC and say, like, hey guys, we're landing here, like, bring the cameras and let's broadcast it to the world. Their technology is way beyond that, and they can just direct and activate
influence.
Each person so that
influence the right people.
So that no one can control the news and the message that's being delivered.
Mm.
So that no one can corrupt it, no human can use it to their advanced way. Their way of spreading terror or anything they want, you know.
It's an important point.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier the revolution will not be televised. I, to a degree, I wish it was televised so that, you know, more people could wake up out of this crazy suicide march we're on and take us on another track. But
maybe that's your mission now, with your channel and the interviews that you're doing. Maybe your dad's mission with the Netflix channel, and maybe Terence McKenna's mission with sharing it, and Dennis, and all these people sharing this knowledge. I believe even knowledge like yoga, like the Vedas, like all these things, these Shipibo wisdom and stuff, they come from these different galactic, different civilizations. Even the tribes in I think it's in Colombia, there is the Tubu tribe that believe that their knowledge and the plants came from Sirius planet of Sirius, and that ayahuasca and tobacco came on a boat from Sirius to be a gift for humanity. There are the Dogon tribes in Africa that still remember they knew about the planet before even the Western world knew about it, and they didn't have any
Sirius being a jewel star.
Right. And so I think it's a knowledge that's been broadcasted to us for centuries, and now we are learning again to remember it. It's like as I think your dad said, we are a species with amnesia. So now we're just remembering.
Well, let's hope we do remember in time and can save it before it's too late.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, David, thank you so much for everything. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you so much, brother. And we have a ceremony tonight, so...
Perfect.
Let's see who we're going to meet.
Excellent.
For sure, and Grandmother Ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Thank you.